27 minutes past hour number one back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A., coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. It's my honor and privilege to have my next guest. I've been waiting to talk to him. He's just 21 years of age, 21-year-old liberal political commentator with more than 8.2 million combined followers on the social media and over 105 million likes on TikTok alone. Matter of fact, I think the number eclipses 9 million. His daily political and social live streams on YouTube and TikTok have made him the Gen Z face of politics. Please welcome for the first time the Straight Shooter with yours truly, Mr. Dean Withers. How are you, Dean? How's everything, man? Good to see you. How's everything?
I'm having a great day out here in sunny Colorado that happens to be a little bit snowy today, but nonetheless, I'm enjoying myself. It's good to be on, and I appreciate you for inviting me to be here.
Man, please, the pleasure is all mine. I'm looking forward to learning something from you tonight, my man. You know, you grew up, correct me if I'm wrong, you grew up in Grand Junction, Colorado, correct? It's an extremely conservative household. How did you become engaged in politics, and when did your perspective shift to a more liberal ideology?
That's a good question, because as you pointed out, I absolutely did grow up not just in a conservative household, but a conservative environment, you know, going to church two times a week and everybody around me kind of having the same thoughts as my parents. So, I mean, the branch off to liberalism for me really started first on J6 when I watched, the president, who's still the president today, you know, Donald Trump, cause his followers to go raid our Capitol, literally smear their feces on the walls inside, which kind of in my mind sparked this thought of sparking division across the country. And at that point, maybe I still agreed with some of his policies, or at least thought I did. But inevitably, because of how divisive that presidency was, it really drove me away. And, you know, since J6, of course, that's 2021 until now in 2026, I've spent my time reading, researching, and really have taken an initiative to learn more about not just the world we live in, but the government in which controls the policy that influences my life and the lives of those that I care. And to put in a nutshell, I think I'm on the left because reality has a left-leaning bias.
I hear what you're saying. I guess what I'm asking is, do you find yourself being on the left because you're against Donald Trump, or because you genuinely feel what liberals feel, policy-wise?
It's a mix of both. I'm on the left because I agree with how liberals feel. And I mean, a lot of the, you know, points that we see being thrown around about the necessary nature of things like universal health care, about caring for everybody, about how social programs, you know, influence a drive to push our country forward compared to holding us back because poor people are lazy, on top of, you know, the social issues that I care about, such as, you know, the acceptance of everybody, regardless of your sexual orientation, race, or gender. But right now, I do spend a lot of my time talking about, you know, the tyranny that we see downstream from the Trump administration. And honestly, today, I feel like what it means to be on the left does include, you know, these policy initiatives that we've been hearing people like Bernie Sanders talk about for years now. But it also includes, you know, this very deep-rooted resentment for, you know, the abuse of power that we are now all watching every day, either on our phone screens, on the TV, or maybe as you are, maybe some of your producers out there in DC.
Do you blame Trump when you're talking about the abuse of power? I shouldn't say do you blame Trump, because I know you do. But I'm talking about, is it just him? Is it primarily him? Or do you have more of a concern about those who, dare we say, are lacking a spine when it comes to confronting him about some of the things that he does? See, for me, I think more about that than him, because I believe that anybody in a position of power, unfortunately, throughout history, has shown that if they can wield it with impunity, they will do so. It's usually the checks and balances that we have in place as the United States of America, where you're checking cats and you're saying, you know, you can't do that. We're not letting you get away with that. We saw more of that in the past. We certainly don't see enough of that now. That's where I look at when I'm looking at Congress and the Senate, obviously, when it comes to, you know, the checks and balances that I believe have been minimized, to say the least.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with you there. I think it, you know, this equation definitely includes a condemnation of those who capitulate. But of course, that all starts with what they're capitulating to. I think that two things can be true at once. I think that the primary driver of a bunch of lawlessness, and as I'd call it, clearly authoritarian practices, is the Trump administration. I mean, every day something new comes out about how they are illegally redacting his name from the files 950,000 times, or how he wants to breach the articles of our Constitution to possibly federalize elections, or how the 14th Amendment is now meaningless. And, you know, we don't care that in 1868 we passed this amendment that gave you a claim to birthright citizenship if you're born here. Now, if your parents are undocumented, guess what? We're going to take it away with no approval from Congress through a new amendment or no reinterpretation from SCOTUS on the basis of the 14th Amendment that already exists. But those who capitulate, they definitely embolden those proclivities. They embolden those behaviors because it absolutely tells Trump that he could get away with it. Trump is the same man today in 2026 that he was in 2017 during his first term, right? Mm-hmm. And for the majority of his first term, with the exclusion of January 6th and the lead up to that, you know, we didn't see the same figure that we do now. We saw somebody who was newer to politics, didn't know how to select the right cabinet to find the right people that are willing to place him above the Constitution, so on and so forth. So I feel as if that capitulation from his cabinet and the capitulation from many people in Congress have definitely emboldened those behaviors that existed 10 years ago that we just didn't see to the same extent because of the lack of capitulation.
What about, as a liberal commentator, what about those on the right that make the argument that you kind of brought it on yourself, not you, the Democratic Party, when they talked about how you weaponized, you know, the justice system in pursuing cases against him? You were excessive in doing so. And as a result, him being back in office and engaging in what I personally called a vengeance tour, you know, against a myriad of people, all of whom you know, the John Boltons of the world, the Letitia James of the world, Jack Smiths of the world, and others, of course. What about the role that liberals are accused of playing in it? Because when they had power, they certainly did everything they could to try and undermine him, if not flat out throw him in jail for the rest of his life. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, if wanting to hold a criminal accountable for their crimes is now something that the right is outcasting, labeling as bad, and using as justification for more crime, I would seriously doubt the speculative basis that those on the right have been screaming and shouting about law and order. Listen, the claim that we see from millions of Americans that the Biden-Harris administration somehow weaponized or abused the DOJ against Trump is baseless. It is a just a form or a piece, a figment of this big lie propaganda that we've seen distributed by the Trump administration in an attempt to get larger populist support for their lawlessness. And a really good example of just how baseless it truly is what we've seen coming from the DOJ in the last year and a month with the Epstein files. I mean, there's a couple things from the Epstein files that we know makes Trump look bad. Okay. We know if it was present and publicly available before the 2020 election would have inevitably led to less people voting for Trump. Could have even won Kamala Harris the election. But because the DOJ upheld such great respect for the independence of the DOJ from the Biden-Harris administration, because that's what the Biden-Harris administration upheld, they didn't dip their hand into those files and just release the ones that incriminated Trump because they respect the because they respect the checks and balances, because they respect that separation. And anybody who would claim otherwise, I believe, is just disseminating the propaganda that has allowed for this lawlessness to occur.
What do you say about your party in terms of them losing the election? Why do you believe Kamala Harris and the Democrats lost in 2024?
I'd say the largest reason why Kamala Harris lost the 2024 election had a lot to do with people's feelings directed towards the economy that didn't perform too well under the Biden-Harris administration, which of course would have been, in my mind, predominantly caused by the pandemic. And a lot of people have this takeaway saying, well, the economy was really bad under Biden. It seems like the liberals are failing my bank account. They're making me stretch my money. So now I'm going to vote for this other guy that says, if I do vote for him, he's going to usher in this golden era economy. It's going to be great and we're all going to win, which of course has been proven to not be true in the last year and a month. And then a couple other things that I'd say helped Trump win the 2024 election, my apologies, has to do with how late Biden stepped down how Biden left Kamala Harris only with a little bit over 120 days to throw together a presidential campaign to run against a man who's already spent the last 10 years of his life campaigning for that same office. And it's a combination of multiple factors, those being the two primary ones.
But wasn't that the party's fault? Couldn't they? I mean, if they got rid of him in July, Couldn't they have gotten rid of him earlier? Couldn't they have got him to step away earlier? So again, there could have been a primary. You might even, listen, I don't want to say a better candidate because I don't think Kamala Harris ran a bad campaign. I thought her disastrous moment was on The View when they asked her, is there anything that you would change? And she's like, no, I can't think of anything. I thought that was a disaster. I thought that was a huge mistake on her part. But for the most part, I didn't think she campaigned badly at all. I just thought she had to deal with the cards that was dealt to her. But many members of the party could have facilitated her getting in earlier. Are you of that belief, or am I stepping out of pocket by saying that?
Well, I'm not necessarily fully opposed to that belief, because I think we all remember Biden saying that he was going to be a one-term transitionary president, which of course that narrative changed. Yeah. He started for a second term, then dropped out. So I'm not opposed to that belief at all. I mean, I definitely do think that the Democratic Party has a lot to learn from the 2024 election, and I think that we are learning a lot from it. I mean, just look at the new figures that are popping up all across this country with the progressive likes of Zohran Mamdani in New York City to, you know, people down in Texas like James Tallarico finally saying the truth and talking about the fact that billionaires are really destructive to the working class, and it's not undocumented immigrants or trans people, which is also, you know, a little bit more progressive than the Democratic Party has been historically. I'm not opposed to those beliefs in the slightest.
Dean Withers right here with Stephen A., straight shooter with Stephen A. You know, right now, I'm thinking about you because getting back to you personally, you rose to fame through your debates on Jubilee, if I remember correctly, a YouTube channel that hosts political and social debates with conservative figures like Charlie Kirk and Ben Shapiro, and for videos like, you know, Liberal Teen or versus 20 Trump supporters. What motivated you to create political content in the first place?
Well, I would say it's just the simple fact that when I've interacted with friends in my own life, when I've talked to my family members, when I've went to school, when I've sat in the classroom, there is a general lack of critical reasoning that is true of the vast majority of American constituents surrounding politics and why we vote for who we do. Okay. And I've seen the GOP primarily Trump, take advantage of this fact and construct harmful misinformation through the use of propaganda campaigns to convince people to believe in lies, hinging on the abuse of the lack of critical reasoning within the American constituent base. So the point of my platform and what I do is just to incentivize people to critically think more. Every day I have open discussions, conversations with people who disagree with me and I disagree with them. And I just simply request them to articulate the reasons why they support Trump. And I request people to value facts, reason, and evidence a little bit more, because I believe if we started doing that in 2015, Donald Trump never would have been president the first time around.
Do you consider yourself the liberal left version of the late Charlie Kirk?
Well, I've seen a lot of people say that on the internet, but I wouldn't prefer the title of the Democratic Charlie Kirk, because I think I'm a lot better at doing what I do than Charlie Kirk was at what he did.
Explain
why.
In
the sense of I saw him go campus to campus to campus, not asking people to critically think, not asking people to open a book, not asking people to use their brain, but rather just asking people to fall for the one-liner gotchas and the same misinformation that's been tired and tried for years and years and years by the Trump administration. I mean, you know, I've honestly really spent a lot of time reflecting on this. You look at Charlie Kirk's Twitter. I would ask you to find me three times he ever disagreed with a single action taken by Donald Trump since 2015. You can't. I mean, I think it was just a larger part of a money-making scheme in an attempt to convince more young Americans to grow up to be like your 48-year-old uncle who will be with Trump until the day he dies, and starting with them young while they're still on the college campus. And that's not what I'm about. That's not what I do. I want people to be smarter. I don't want people to be sheep.
Yeah, you want people to be smarter. You don't want people to be sheep. And I totally believe you on that. But my question to you would be, how willing are you to disagree with a Democrat in Trump's position? And like you said, Charlie Kirk very rarely disagreed with Trump. Did you disagree in an abundance with Biden?
There actually was a handful of things that I had disagreements with Biden on. I mean, one big thing is I'm not the biggest fan of the state of Israel. And I think that it's time that we, you know, stop bowing the knee to whatever Israel wants, whenever they want. And it's time that we stop seeing senators and congressmen and women winning elections, running on, I'm going to do what is ever in the best interests of the state of Israel. On top of a handful of other things, too. I'd say right now, the fruits of the work that I and other more progressive voices that don't align 110% with the Biden-Harris administration or the Democratic Party have been putting in has a lot to do with immigration. I mean, 10 years ago, the notion of mass deportation maybe being wrong and mass amnesty, the idea of maybe giving some undocumented immigrants a path to greater residency or citizenship, making sense was radical. But I mean, anymore today, I'll have Trump supporters joining my stream and I'll explain to them, hey, listen, you know, we would be able to reduce human rights violations. We'd be able to keep families together. We'd be able to grow our own prosperous economy even more than we already are if we just maybe made some of the undocumented immigrants here residents or citizens. And they're biting on it. They say, hey, Dean, that makes sense. And I think the only reason why we're seeing the social shift on certain policies or agendas is because of more progressive parties that have historically diverted from the DNC. And I think now the DNC is finally starting to respond pretty responsibly to that by uplifting more progressive voices.
I have not heard your positions on immigration. Could you remind my audience what that is?
Sure. So I mean, I think that immigration is one of those topics that can't really be discussed by anybody in like 30 seconds or less. And I think if anybody tells you they can discuss immigration or 30 seconds or less, they're just feeding you like likely partisan talking points.
Fair.
But, you know, in an attempt to condense it down to a nutshell, I mean, I think the way that we can very pragmatically reduce undocumented immigration into this country is by wiping out the incentive for 99.9% of it. I mean, look, you know, 99.9% of undocumented immigrants are not violent criminals. You know, they're not MS-13 gang members. You know, they're hardworking mothers and fathers or unaccompanied minors. And why have they chosen to enter into this country with the use of undocumented means? Well, it's because our border has a backlog of like 12 years if you want to become a citizen. You're going to be waiting there for years and years and years just to get into the application process. You've got to spend thousands of dollars. That system is unattainable. And I think that our Congress, for the most part, is culpable in a bipartisan nature with disproportionately leaning to the right, with not making the legal means of entry into this country as attainable as they should be. And I think I could prove this because you'll hear people like Trump say that we have this crisis of undocumented entry, illegal immigrants, we need to stop it now. But you can't find me a single clip of that man standing in the podium with a mic in the last 10 years saying that we need to make the legal means of entry into this country easier. And maybe that would stop a lot of undocumented entry on its own. And that's just the border. I mean, this conversation doesn't even scratch the surface about the undocumented immigrants that are already here. But what I can tell you in 30 seconds or less is that we probably shouldn't be deporting them with no due process to a center for terrorists in El Salvador, where they are then tortured from 9 p.m. till 6 a.m. I think there's a lot of better alternatives.
Fair enough. But what level of culpability do you throw towards the Democratic Party, particularly the Biden administration, when they said, I don't know whether the accurate number is 12 million, 14 million, 15 million across the border illegally. What do you say to that? That people say that's not sustainable. That can't happen. That wouldn't happen in any other nation. Why should we let it happen in ours? What would be your response to that?
I'd give the Biden-Harris administration a good C- on immigration. I think that they're a lot better than a lot of people, specifically on the right, think. You know, the talking points that I hear every day is, you know, they opened the border or they just left the border open. They didn't really do anything about it. And I feel like this really overshadows their attempt to push a bipartisan border bill through the American Congress, drafted by Republican James Lankford, who is, you know, one of Donald Trump's favorites. So it's crazy that we were able to find this bipartisan agreement that not only would expedite the legal means of entry into this country by funding courts along our southern border billions and billions and billions of dollars, therefore naturally disincentivizing undocumented entry, you know, but it also would have given the president this very special authority that the president's never had before to just completely shut the border down, you know, once a certain amount of undocumented immigrants had crossed it on a rolling daily average for a week. And in response to, you know, this bill being propped up by the American Congress, in response to Republicans and Democrats coming together for the first time in a long time on immigration policy, I truly think people overlook how significant that was. Donald Trump turned around and told Republicans to shoot it down. So, I mean, I think we saw a good attempt there by the Biden-Harris administration to do something. But, you know, of course, the reason why I'd give them a C- instead of an A+ is because, you know, they probably could have used executive orders such as they did in their last year, a little bit earlier in their administration. But I mean, that is such a smaller and more insignificant critique of their administration compared to, once again, the talking points we see from the right saying they let all these criminal, illegal invader aliens into the country because they want them to vote in elections to ensure that Republicans never get power again.
Right. What do you think the Democratic Party is most strongest right now?
What I think they're the most strongest?
Where do you think they're most? Where do you think they're most strongest right now?
I'd say the strongest point of the Democratic Party today in February of 2026 would be for pushing for accountability with the Epstein files. I'd say that they could do a lot more, which of course will probably always be said about politics, and we should, by the way. It's good to advocate for more progression. But I'd say what they're doing right now is strong. You know, for the first time ever, I'm opening my phone and going on the Democrats' TikTok account, which they started, and I'm able to legitimately read how the president is refusing to release all the files, is breaking law, defying Congress. I'm able to see great Democrats like Jamie Raskin, like Rep. Rocana, and many others pressure Pam Bondi in this congressional hearing that was held with her a handful of days ago, maybe a week ago, exposing her as the fraud she is, having her pivot to talking about the economy when they're just simply trying to get her to look at the Epstein survivors. That is definitely the strongest point of the Democratic Party today.
You're 21 years of age. If you had to give Democratic leadership one piece of advice about reaching young men such as yourself, not that they got to reach you, but you know what I mean. If you had to give them one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, that's a really good question. Reaching young men. Well, I would first honestly say this is the biggest piece of advice I'd give to current Democratic leaders to reach young men. Is to invest more in the deconstruction of the beliefs that a lot of young men in America already have, that have them firmly on the right. I think that we've seen a major capitalization of social media, of the interests that are more typical of young men, like the gym, like cars, and many other things, for years now, in a way that we just simply haven't seen from the left, that has really given the right an upper hand to kind of convince young men of whatever they want to almost indoctrinate them into these subliminal biases or foundational core beliefs that are antithetical to the values of the left. And the biggest piece of advice for the Democrats, once again, would just be to start working on deconstructing that. You know, we need to be talking more about, you know, how maybe men are also hurt by toxic masculinity. You're not just hurting women, you're hurting yourself because now you've isolated yourself from anybody who could ever possibly love you because you're an asshole to them. How, you know, it's just a complete and total lie that the left wants to take all your money in taxation and then give it to, you know, low-income Americans to waste away in squalor while they watch TV until midnight, and how social safety nets actually are beneficial, not just to low-income Americans, but to everybody, mm-hmm. So on and so forth.
Last question to you, and thank you for your time, by the way. I really enjoyed the conversation. I really appreciate it. Let me ask you this question, last question. Is there one candidate, one, within the Democratic Party that you can point to that you absolutely positively, not just want, but firmly believes can beat any GOP candidate out there for the presidency of the United States?
I think that's a very complex question, because when we're talking about beating somebody, it's not just what policies are they running on or what they like to talk about. It's, you know, what they can convince the people of. I'm going to be honest here, Stephen. From my perspective, it's a little bit too early for me to put all my eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. But what I will say, God, when I listen to AOC talk, you know, there's just this feeling that I haven't gotten since Obama. When I listen to AOC talk, when I listen to people like James Tallarico talk, you know, there's this feeling that I just haven't gotten for so long of intellect, of high levels of education, of a legitimate care for other people.
I'm not questioning that, Dean. I'm not questioning that, Dean, but I am worried about I don't want to call it socialism all the way, but certainly some of the things that they're saying, I mean, come on, Dean. You got to admit that. I mean, they're not traditional Democratic operatives. Are you willing to admit that?
Well, I mean, traditional Democratic operatives lost the last election to a 34-count felon held civilly liable for rape. So I think it's time we start progressing.
Well, whose fault was that? Isn't that the Democratic voters in this country? Nearly 75 million people went to the poll. How come you didn't make sure it was over 77?
Well, you asked me whose fault it is that the Democrats lost the last election. We actually had a conversation about that earlier. I told you I think it's a mixed mash of people like Trump and his and convincing him of convincing the people about him being better for the economy, and a lack of culpability for Biden not stepping down earlier. But listen, I think what we're seeing now with this whole socialism scare is a whole lot like the Red Scare of McCarthyism. I'm not a socialist. I'm not a communist. I'm actually, on the foundational level, I'm a capitalist. I think that there's a way we could practice capitalism that is benevolent. Okay, I'm a social democrat. But same at the same time, you know, there's no socialist in any public office anywhere in America that's turning around and saying that they want to take your rights away from the ownership of the privatized means of production. I mean, just look at Zohran Mamdani, somebody who proudly
I was getting ready to bring him up.
Yeah, somebody who proudly calls himself a socialist is a working social democrat within the American political system.
Okay.
Because right now there just simply is no room for socialism as it stands. It's not something the people support, and that's not something that 99% of the Congress supports.
Dean Withers, I would love to continue this conversation, but I got to get ready to go. I want you to know you're welcome back on the show anytime. I really enjoyed the conversation, getting to know you a little bit. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and you're welcome back anytime, and you're welcome to sit up there and check in and correct me anytime you want or whatever. You're smart as a whip, my man. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
You have a good rest of your night, man.
You do the same. Dean Withers, right here with Straight Shooter, with Stephen A. Love the conversation, no doubt about it. Said a lot of interesting things, a lot of stuff to discuss, and we certainly will after we talk to Governor Westmore. 866-967-6887. You're listening live, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more in a minute.